Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Mahan. Dr. Ava is a gifted attorney, researcher, lecturer, and author of 5 books. She received her Juris Doctorate from Georgetown University and is a member of the New York Bar Association. Dr. Ava has been featured in Essence magazine many times and was named by Essence as being one of America's most powerful black women. Dr. Ava is also a student national spokesperson for the Nation of Islam and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
So going back to Nicodemus, you must be born again. That's not just for the Caucasian. That's for us too, to be born of the water and born of the Spirit. What could this mean? The wind blows, you hear the sound, but you don't know where it comes from or where it's going. That is using the wind as a sign of the original man. He's from everlasting to everlasting. And the only way that Nicodemus could be saved, he had to be born of the original water and born of that original spirit of the original man. He had to enter into a womb. So God, who created the spirit of love and created water, if you're born of the water, then you have to be born of that spirit. And that spirit is love. It should be the guiding energy of your life. If not, we will fall short of what Allah intends for us. The scripture says you can tell that we have passed from death into life because we love the brotherhood. All life, the Quran teaches, comes up out of water. So we are born of the water, but a special kind of water. The wisdom of God is compared to water and its revelation, and the spirit of that wisdom is the creative force that will allow us to build the kingdom of God. This book, Quran, is a womb. So when you're born out of the water of this revelation, the Holy Quran, I submit to you, you will be made anew.
The Elevated Places call-in number is 347-324-5091, or visit us on our radio show page at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. And now, here is your host, Dr. Ava Muhammad.
Assalamu alaikum, Ramadan Mubarak. Welcome to Elevated Places. I am your host, Ava Muhammad, and I am so happy and grateful that I am able to be with you once again. We are live on blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. That's blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. Now, Elevated Places, of course, is a forum where we exchanged a high level of discussion, spiritual, political, historical, financial, and economic. We address freedom, justice, and equality for the black man and woman who are the descendants of slaves in America, and also a message for humanity around the globe. And so we invite any and everyone to join us in this discussion and to feel free to share their insight on the subject of the day. Of course, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan just completed part 28 of a 58-part series, The Time and What Must Be Done. And what you just heard was an excerpt from that powerful episode, which is entitled How Satan Came into Existence. Episode 27 was entitled Why God Made Devil. Episode 28, How God Made Devil, or How Satan Came into Existence. And we invite you to listen to the premiere of The Time and What Must Be Done every Saturday evening. You can go to noi.org/time, and you can hear the premiere of the episodes at 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern, every Saturday evening. And, of course, if you are unable to come on at that time, you can visit noi.org and click The Time and What Must Be Done. The episodes are also carried in the Final Call newspaper. And you can read, you can listen, or you can watch the video. So tonight is going to be very exciting. We have some special guests on. But, of course, Elevated Places would not be the program that it is without the callers. So call us at any time during the broadcast. I suggest you do it early so that you don't get left out. 347-324-5091. 347-324-5091. And we already have callers queuing up so that we can first continue our discussion on the verdict and the aftermath of the Zimmerman trial, George Zimmerman being the killer of 17-year-old Trayvon Martin on February 26th of 2012. We are going to, before we get into our discussion tonight, I am always grateful for the Elevated Places team. And joining me, of course, is my traveling co-host. And we are always blessed when we can lock him down. He is a very busy brother, a tremendous helper of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam. And he is a very, very popular force on Elevated Places, and that is my dear brother, Terrence Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, brother Terrence.
Wa alaikum salam. How are you, ma'am? Ramadan Mubarak.
Oh, I'm wonderful. I am feeling blessed to be alive, and I know that you have some news for us. Before you get into that, I want to acknowledge the presence of our esteemed Elevated Places contributor and analyst, who is also the minister, the head of the Ministry of Agriculture, Dr. Ridgely Muhammad. And he's actually doing what you usually do, Brother Terrence. He's multitasking tonight. He's in a conference, but he also is taking time to make sure we get some of that wisdom. And so, Dr. Ridgely, assalamu alaikum to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, alaikum salam. I'm glad to be here, trying to help out.
Yes, sir. Glad to have you. There's some breaking news tonight with regard to the Zimmerman verdict, and we're going to get to that shortly. I'm also pleased that we are going to be joined shortly by a very powerful minister in the Nation of Islam, and that is Brother Michael Muhammad. Brother Michael Muhammad, I remember back in the days of the Final Call when he was actually just coming out of his teens, and one of the most, even then, one of the most popular ministers in the Nation of Islam, and he has been out in the highways and byways spreading the word, and I am glad that through my husband, Brother Darius, I was able to get hold of him this evening so that he can weigh in on this discussion and bring us his insight on the Zimmerman case and all of that is really going on with us in America as she undergoes her disintegration. Also tonight, and I'm going to open up the line shortly after Brother Terrence updates us, Brother Tariq Muhammad out of Houston, Texas, the Nation of Islam Student Association is hosting a very significant event next month. And so we've got to hear about that. I was blessed to get an invitation to take part in that, and my family and I are super excited that we're going to be traveling to Houston, Texas next month. So Brother Tariq is going to talk to us about that. But first, Brother Terrence, what is happening around the nation?
So, you know, there are a lot of things going on, but as always, you know, I have to always remind everybody, it's no joke, it's not a game. You must know the time, you must know what must be done. So the Time of What Must Be Done series every Saturday, 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern, at noi.org/the time, or go to YouTube and watch Minister Farrakhan as he gives divinely given messages for us and the world that are so timely, so necessary in the day that we're living. And I say that is because once you really understand the time, then you can understand what is going on around us as we watch. We do want to thank our brother Tariq and the powerful things that are, that will be going on in Houston with also Brother Jesse, Brother Abdul on these panels dealing with our youth. And we thank our brother, Brother Abdul, who came down to Charlotte, North Carolina, and talked about staying your ground. It was a powerful lecture. We had a lot of our civil rights icons in the state there. And it was very much so interesting as we look at the Stand Your Ground laws and the numerous amount of states that they're in, as North Carolina has been lifted up as far as a lot of things going on for as it relates to legislation, as it relates to these voting rights, health care. There's a lot of things that are going on. And before I even go there, I do want to thank the students or congratulate the students of MUI, Muhammad University of Islam, for a wonderful and beautiful graduation for the students that did graduate. And we also was blessed to hear from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan this week as he spoke at the prayer breakfast for the ACLC at the wonderful, beautiful, marvelous restaurant of the people called the Salam Restaurant in Chicago, Illinois. And if you have not had brunch there, a Sunday brunch, or you haven't had a meal there during the week, you are missing out on a treat going to the Salam Restaurant. We also know that, you know, much respect and people power to those that had Trayvon Martin rallies this past Saturday. National Action Network had 100 cities do a rally at noon at federal buildings, and the crowds were large. I know those crowds, huge crowds in Atlanta, Chicago, Texas, Oakland, and San Francisco had people out, even in North Carolina, pushing for justice for our brother. One of the things I will say, as we push for justice for Trayvon, we must continue for justice for our people and those things that are going on in our community. We also want to remind everybody that the movie of Oscar Grant, Fruitvale Station, is out, and I think it will be out in all stations, all movie theaters tomorrow. We want to make sure that you go see that. It's a powerful, powerful movie of the story of Oscar Grant that are going on. And also in the news, Muhammad's Mosque, the FOI of Muhammad's Mosque number 7, will have an evening this Saturday evening with Dick Gregory. He'll be at the mosque there in Harlem at 5 p.m. For those that love activism and community, Dick Gregory, he will be speaking in Harlem, New York. So there's a lot of things going on. I know we want to go right into our discussion. Right now I am in Philadelphia, home of brotherly love, And there's some interesting things going here. I'm at the National Urban League annual conference, and this morning we heard from the U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, and he gave some words about things that are going on across the country. Tomorrow morning we're going to be blessed to hear from Al Sharpton and Reverend Jesse Jackson and my president of the Hip Hop Caucus, Reverend Lennox Yearwood, as well as hear from my sister, mother of Trayvon Martin. We will be hearing from her tomorrow here at the National Urban League Conference at the Convention Center in Philadelphia. So it's a lot of things going on, and there's a lot of fight for justice, and there's a lot of fight for jobs as we're getting prepared for the March on Washington, August 24th. And after all these things are going on, the back page of the Final Call is still relevant of what, as Minister Farrakhan said before, it's not just what the Muslims want and believe, it's what black people should want, as we're looking at, we're still trying to assimilate and ask America to give us jobs and justice when we need to do for self. And the theme of Elevated Places has always been separation.
Sir, yes, sir. Well, we're going to go to Brother Tariq, who is joining us out of Houston, Texas, with the Nation of Islam Student Association, so that he can give us some insight as to what is going on that is of such critical importance next month. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Tariq.
Alaikum salam, ma'am. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm wonderful. And yourself?
Praise be to Allah. I'm doing wonderful by Allah's grace and mercy. I want to first open up in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Most Merciful. I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, who came in the person of Master Farad Muhammad, whom praises due forever. I further bear witness that the black man from Sandersville, Georgia, who only had a third grade education, is the eternal leader of the Nation of Islam and the warner to the government of our people. I'm speaking to none other but the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I further bear witness that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is the epitome of an FOI, the epitome of a husband to the MGT, a divine leader, teacher, and guide in our Mr. Day, what we call the last man standing. I want to greet my beloved brothers and sisters who is listening, tuning in via internet and phone call with the greeting words of peace and paradise, we say it in Arabic language, Assalamu alaikum.
Salaam.
Praise be to Allah. I want to personally thank you, Dr. Mr. Ava, for this wonderful opportunity for us as youth to become leaders and to showcase our talents and skills as being students of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Minister Louis Farrakhan. So I definitely want to first thank you. I also want to thank the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan for being that one that we look up today and our Mr. Day as a very divinely guided one. I also want to thank Minister Robert Muhammad, the Student Southwest Regional Minister here in the Southwest region, being a wonderful representative of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And I also want to thank the young people in our city for doing a tremendous job working tirelessly every single day to make this youth conference a very, very successful conference. In part 23 of the time, what must be done. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that it would take a united and concerted effort to save all of our youth. So here in the city of Houston, we're doing exactly that. We're going out in the communities, we're getting our people, we're going throughout the nation, and we're inviting the entire nation, all of the youth throughout the nation. If you're young, if you're old, you're still a youth. You know, you only a youth when you have a youthful spirit and mindset. And if we are followers of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, then all of us are youth. So then that means that all of us are invited to this youth conference. We named it the Truth Summit. And as we see that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is stressing to all of us, young and old, no matter what age you are, that we should stand firmly on truth no matter what the circumstance is. So we named the youth conference the Truth Summit. Now, the way that the truth is spelled is T-R-Y-O-U-T-H, not T-R-U-T-H, because when we look at truth, we see ourselves in it. So some of the topics that the conference is going to be going over is dealing with the nine ministries that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan established in 2005 at the Millions More Movement. We know that that is definitely, those topics and those ministries are definitely the foundation of building a nation. And so we're true followers of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and students of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, then we have to build a nation. And we know that any change or revolution in any community, nation, no matter what background you are or studying or what religious practice you're studying, you know that any revolution or change starts with the young people. So we're targeting the young people. So the youth conference will be held in Houston, Texas, August 9th through the 11th, 2013, at the Holiday Inn Reliant Park. The subtitle for this conference is The Blueprint to Our Future. So we're showcasing our talents and our skills, but we're also informing our people about the economic blueprint, because we know that our people are struggling financially and in other areas, but we know that it takes finances to really to survive in this world today and to really build a community and beautify our communities. So we have to show an economic blueprint, and we have to inform our people about the economic blueprint that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has showcased and established to us in this past Savior's Day lecture. So we're doing a lot. And
yes, sir. Yes, sir.
We're definitely trying to build a nation, starting just in Houston, but we also want to encourage and inspire all of the youth around the nation to do the exact same thing. And I know it's happening because I'm communicating with a lot of the young people around the nation, and everybody's doing something to follow out the instructions of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and that is to get all of our youth.
That's right. And what is the website? I have visited the website. It's a very powerful weekend with your panels and your also a concert on Saturday night.
Yes,
but
ma'am.
What can you give the website address?
Yes, ma'am.
Any phone numbers that people can call?
Yes, ma'am. Most definitely. The website is called noisahouston.com. noisahouston.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at noisahouston, or if you're on Instagram, you can follow us there at noisahouston as well. A contact information, you can email us at noisahouston@gmail.com, noisahouston@gmail.com. A phone number to reach, direct contact, you may reach me, Brother Tariq Muhammad, at 832-677-6941, 832-677-6941. There is another person that you may reach if you're not able to reach me, and that is Brother Joshua, which is one of the co-coordinators for the conference. His number is 832-398-2088,
832-398-2088. Beautiful. And, you know,
yes,
it, as you have said, we cannot overemphasize the importance of the activity of the youth who are born to solve the problems of their time and your time, Brother Tariq. And so it is crucial that we support you in this event.
Most definitely, yes, ma'am. So it's definitely an honor that you have accepted our invitation, as well as Dr. Risley, because he is also one of the presenters for the conference. So we definitely have a powerhouse that's going to be here in Houston for the youth conference. So I am definitely excited. We're 15 days away from a very powerful, or what we call an epic event, here in the city of Houston and all around the nation. I'm ecstatic about what's going to be taking place. I know we're going to be making history, and inshallah, I'm for sure that we are in the same mindset as the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
Yes, sir. So, Dr. Risley, I lost my voice. It's almost,
get it back.
It's almost dark. I'm drying out, but it's almost dark.
Oh, wow.
Break fast. But you are going to be a presenter. That is phenomenal.
Yes, I have to get them my outline to tonight, and as I'm listening to the brother, I'm getting a better understanding of direction I'm going to go. And I think I'm going to deal with the farm as the engine for our national life and show how starting from agriculture, all the different disciplines evolved from that to support agriculture. And then when people understand how those disciplines were developed, then people can better understand how they can fit into a particular discipline in life to prepare themselves for life, to make a living, and to be of service to others.
Absolutely. And we know that there's no such thing as freedom and independence and sovereignty that is self-rule. It's not going to happen without land acquisition. And we don't acquire land without a knowledge of how to develop it. Because there's two things we have to have is a place to live and a place from which we can grow our own food. Outside of that, everything else we're doing is a waste of time. So this
That's
is
right.
great.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I wanted to jump in here.
Sure.
Babe,
I don't want
people to underestimate the power of what Brother Tariq and those that are organizing this summit. A couple of things. One, the Dream Defenders in Florida are taking over one of the Capitol buildings and forcing conversations with the governor there. And there are some students in North Carolina that are sitting in at the governor's house and getting arrested and forcing conversation here about things that are going on across the nation. And we look at 50 years of since the March on Washington, and as I told people, when you look at those elders that talk about the civil rights struggles, I told them just to track 40, 50, 60 years from their age and really get a context of who they were back then. It was always about the young people as we look at the Children's March in Birmingham, and it was always about the young people that started the revolution. And as we see, and the minister talks about the young people rising up, so we understand that this summit comes right before college starts back and school starts back. So we're trying to, and they are, I know, trying to give young people marching orders because we want them to infuse the knowledge and the information to take back into these high school classes, these junior high classes, as well as the college classes, because we don't want to leave out our young people that are very intelligent. And I say that because it was young people that caused the largest deployment of military on any college campus in Greensboro, North Carolina, when students voted in a young man as the SGA president at an all-black high school, Dudley High School, and the administration denied him, which caused them to link up with North Carolina A&T and a deployment of military with 50 caliber came on the campus. And I bring that particular history up of 1969 is because it's always been about young people that caused a serious revolutionary movement and power. As I look
That's
at
right.
40 years of hip-hop, and hip-hop, when it first conception, African Bambaataa was the head of the black spades that was unifying the black gang. So we talking about this gang warfare. No, hip-hop at one time was used to unify the African Bambaataa, unified the gangs, and then used hip-hop when he changed to African Bambaataa to put a positive twist in New York. So the power of youth, the power of hip-hop as it is being used for exploitation now is going to be changed for empowerment. So once these youth get this information from you, Dr. Ava, from Brother Abdul, from Dr. Ridgen, and all those that are speaking, the students will have a redefined direction and a redefined purpose as they're going into the educational killing fields and the educational system so that they can pull out and extract out of these colleges, out of these high schools, those leaders, those emerging leaders that we are looking for that can help get this planet and get this world back on track. And I think as we're at the conference, they should also deal with the international component because college students are afforded that opportunity to travel overseas so that we can make sure that we're connected, as the messenger had on the Muhammad speech, connecting us back with Africa and making those international relationships. So our young people are very important. So I think anyone that can and shall, that can back this conference should be there and support
right.
them and give them
yes,
help
sir.
Because we have to give resources and support to our youth and our young people. So this is a very necessary and powerful conference coming up.
Yes, sir.
Yes,
and what we're going to do, and thank you, Brother Terrence, and thank you, Brother Tariq, for coming on this evening, and we're going to
yes,
definitely
sir.
Have you back prior to the event itself so we can make a
Praise
final push.
Allah.
Yes,
yes,
sir.
Ma'am.
Thank you so much, beloved, and may Allah bless
no.
us with much success in that conference. Thank you, sir.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I appreciate that. And we can't
yes,
wait to see you at the conference, as well as Dr.
Right.
Risley and all of the other presenters and panelists.
Yes, sir.
We are definitely excited to see the future. So I just want to personally thank you one more time.
Yes, sir. Oh, thank you, beloved. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
All right, wonderful. And, of course, tonight, I also want to very pleased to welcome to Elevated Places, and I'm going to open up his mic because we're about to hear an excerpt from an interview that has taken place that is breaking news today in the wake of the Zimmerman trial. We have Student Minister Michael Muhammad out of Chicago, Illinois, who is a longtime representative of the nation and the minister. And we were very blessed to get him to come on at the last minute. But he's one of the most powerful speakers and insightful minds in the nation. And while we're talking about youth, he came in and took to the rostrum when he was still in his teens. And so we're happy to have him tonight. Welcome, Brother Michael Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Ramadan Mubarak. Greetings
Ramadan
to everyone. Peace and blessings.
Yes, sir.
Thank you,
my
sister minister, for having me on. I'm very, very excited to be here.
Well, that's great, and this is the first, but it won't be the last time. I know the callers are going to enjoy you and the listeners and those who are logged in. And we're going to listen. We just couldn't do this show without the genius of our IT specialist, Sister LaDonna Muhammad. And at the last minute, she was able to upload an audio. Today, juror B29 went public and gave an interview with Robin Roberts of the ABC morning program. The interview is going to air tomorrow morning. And essentially, B29 is that, quote, minority on the jury. And as it turns out, she is Puerto Rican. When you see and hear her, she's a black woman. I mean, that's the bottom line. And she was the juror whose vote was for an conviction, a guilty vote of murder in the second degree. She was the sole juror who wanted to find Zimmerman guilty of murder in the second degree. And ultimately, as we know, because there was an acquittal, she was, I don't want to say talked out of it. I'm going to say that she was probably pressured out of it. But I think we should hear her words, and then we can all talk about it and get the panel's insight as well as the callers. So if we could
What was your first
vote?
My first vote was second-degree murder.
Second-degree murder.
In between the 9 hours, it was hard. A lot of us that wanted to find something bad, something that we could connect to the law. For myself, he's guilty because the evidence shows he's guilty.
He's guilty of
killing Trayvon Martin. But as the law was read to me, if you have no proof that he killed him intentionally, you can't find you can't say he's guilty.
Did you want to step out at all? Did you want to
I was
quit?
The juror that was going to give him the hung. Oh, I was. I fought to the end. I mean, it's hard for me to sleep. It's hard for me to eat because I feel that I was forcibly included in Trayvon Martin's death. And as I carry him on my back, I'm hurting as much as Trayvon Martin's mom is. Because there's no way that any mother should feel that pain. George Zimmerman, George Zimmerman got away with murder, but you can't get away from God. And at the end of the day, he's going to have a lot of questions and answers he has to deal with. The law couldn't prove it, but, you know, the world goes in circles.
All right. Very powerful.
Yes. Very powerful.
Well,
I want to say, yes, sir, let me just do this real quick. I'm going to give you just a brief background on her. She is
okay.
A nursing assistant. She's a mother of 8 children. She is 36 years old. She's Puerto Rican. And she just moved to Florida recently from Chicago. So I just wanted to give that backdrop. But go ahead, Dr. Ridgely.
I just have a question to you as an attorney, as a lawyer. I don't understand what she meant by they had to prove that he intended to kill Trayvon. I mean, was it did the gun go off by mistake? Was this an argument in the
trial?
Well,
I'll tell you, you raised to me the core problem with this jury. And when I spoke Sunday at the Mosque Mariam, that was one of the things that I addressed, was that the jury departed from the law. Because even in the face of a weak case by the prosecution, there is no way they should have come out of there without a conviction, at least of the lesser charge of manslaughter. You're exactly right. When she made the statement in her interview,
so I assume that she dropped off. We're going to wait for her to come back on. But did you have anything to add, Dr. Ridgely, on that particular point?
No, I'm just waiting for her answer because to me that's kind of strange that he wasn't shooting at a sign and happened to hit Trayvon. I mean, it's definitely he intended to kill Trayvon. As a matter of fact, I know he said that he's in the beginning that God told him to do it, that God wanted him to do it. So he knew what he did, and I know that if a black person killed a white person and then say God told them to do it, they would definitely put him in jail if not in the same asylum.
I'm back. Here we go again. They cut me off, but
okay.
Yes, sir. On the intent, you said it right about the gun. First of all, George Zimmerman admitted that he intentionally killed Trayvon.
Okay.
His defense was self-defense.
Okay.
Unlike the majority of defendants, including O.J. Simpson, O.J. Simpson said, I did not do it. I was not there.
Right.
And so the prosecution had to prove another element of the crime that wasn't required in this case. You know, there are many murder convictions, as we all know, where they don't even have a body. They weren't able to even find a body. And the prosecution used circumstantial evidence. There are people that are doing life, people that were executed for murder, and they couldn't even find the body. You need a body. you need a means of death. So the prosecution went in this case with the two most essential elements of the crime already having been admitted to by the defendant. They didn't have to do the ballistics and all that to show it was his gun and that he had the gun. He admitted that. He said he did it. And so, you know, what my husband's first comment was, see, this is the dumbing down of America. One of the problems. You know, that you're saying that intent was not proven, but it appears when she used the term, she said she was forcefully included in Trayvon Martin's death. I talked Sunday about a mistrial. Even though Zimmerman cannot be tried again on the state level, there are some issues remaining open for the federal government in terms of, in my judgment, coming against the state of Florida itself. But she said she was forcefully included in Trayvon Martin's death. But Brother Michael, why don't you give us some insight on that, and then we'll continue with the panel and go to the phones.
Well, yes, ma'am. I think in addition to this new juror statement, I would add that when I read her statement, she said, she used the words, I feel the verdict was already told. So I took that as her saying, this trial was, and then she also said that, I forget the words that she used, but she implied that the whole trial was a publicity stunt.
Right.
She said I felt like this was a publicity stunt. The whole court service thing to me was publicity. And then she says, I feel the verdict was already told. So this speaks to my perceptions was in that I think the whole trial was a response to the visceral reaction of the community, of the black community's demand for some action. And so they staged this whole process so they could say in the end, well, we did what you asked for. We put this man on trial. So don't ask us for anything else. We put on a whole show for you guys to satisfy your emotions and to make you feel better, and we're still going to let him go. And so I think her words just connect the other dot to the way the prosecution were very incompetent in the way they pressed the case, and at the end, the disposition of the lead prosecutor. I mean, she came out as though she was receiving an Oscar or a Grammy. She was so happy and jovial and congratulatory, and then I never have seen in the history of a defendant being charged by the prosecutor that the defendant's lawyer comes out and thanks the police for helping them against the prosecution. And so all of these things, if we're really conscious and paying attention, it's just Satan saying to us, we're going to do what we want to do the way we want to do it, and there's nothing you can say to make us do otherwise.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. The point also that she made, because you're right, she did characterize the trial as a publicity stunt, and you said it exactly right. I was so concerned last year when the parents kept saying, as well as the family lawyer, all we want is an arrest.
Mm.
And I was thinking to myself then, that's all you're going to get.
Mm. Come on.
You know, because you keep saying, why are you saying you just want an arrest? You need to say you want justice.
Right.
That's right.
And, you know, I've heard the minister say, you know, how can we get justice as balance? So if someone's in the ground, the only balance that I would see is an execution.
That's right.
That's right.
You know, he needed to be convicted of murder and put to death, if we're talking about balance, because their child and our child is in the ground.
That's right.
This man is now, we're way at the other extreme. They let him walk out of that courtroom. But we've had brother Oscar has been holding for quite some time, so we're going to, the time goes so fast on this show, we're going to take Brother Oscar's call. As-salamu alaykum, Brother Oscar.
Walaikum salam. Can you all hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Sir.
Okay. First of all, I had several points I wanted to share with you all, but I wanted to thank Sukeva for our lecture Sunday. I always walk away learning more, feeling better, more inspired when I hear your lectures. I definitely want to give you thanks for that. I think I forgot to give a greeting. As-salamu alaykum, everyone.
Walaikum salam.
And also, if feasible, I want to encourage you to, you know, speak more often, when possible, with Mas Marion, because I think in a time like this, we really need your voice more often. I've been in the nation about 2 decades now, and same for the minister. You're about the most articulate and effective and most insightful speaker, in my humble opinion.
So, well, he's right.
I just want to put that out
there.
I have a strong, very strong appreciation for what you're bringing and what you have brought in the 2 decades I've been listening to you. So thank you for that. And also in your lecture Sunday, you triggered something when you went into a very insightful definition about the word lynching. And it inspired me to look up Brother Claude Neal's lynching, and I researched that. But also, Minister Farrakhan has suggested we read a text called Without Sanctuary some time ago.
Yes.
And I had it on my shelf collecting dust for a while. And when you defined the word lynching, that sparked, inspired me to want to open that book up and start reading it. And I don't know if you take requests, but I definitely would love to hear you give a lecture, maybe with that as a foundation, about lynching on that, and about lynching and talking about lynching and giving us more insight into that historical context. And even to the point where I already volunteered to help with the research because I'm here in Chicago as well.
Writing your number
down. Yes, ma'am. I'll do that.
Yes, sir.
And lastly, I wanted to, it's a technical suggestion about possibly opening up for Sister LaDonna. Maybe this is a technical suggestion about possibly opening up the show to be able to take in questions or comments via text or some kind of typing methodology.
Yes, sir. Yes.
And you know, where just a suggestion, maybe people who are voice impaired or with other disabilities may open it up for opportunity for people like that to maybe come on and comment and have questions on the show. And last thing, I had a question. I wanted to, we in a nation we always talk about separation. And I wanted to play a bit of a devil's advocate to a certain extent because we talk about we need to separate. But I wanted to go into what does that mean on a practical level. When we say separation, and I know we talk about it a bit, but sometimes I get questions from people, what does that mean? We move to some part of the country that white folks are not in. We develop our banks. And I know we talk about that a bit, but I wanted to talk about maybe on a more fundamental level.
Okay.
Yes, sir. We can not just use that term, but we can say what we mean when we use that term. And that's all I have, and I appreciate you all the time.
Thank you, Brother Oscar. Walaikum salam. Beautiful call.
Very good. Well, you know, I like to call separation voluntary segregation, meaning that you just make a decision that you're just going to support your own and you're not going to support the others. That's the beginning. It's like the boycott now in Florida. Well, you know, just don't go to Florida. Well, if we don't go to Florida, if we don't go to Disney World, then what do we do with our money? You know, how do we find entertainment? Well, you start finding entertainment amongst yourself. You start supporting yourself. You start putting money away to develop something for yourself and your people. And you stop trying to run from your people. I mean, most of us live in segregated situations. We all live in a certain part of town, the majority of us anyway. The only problem is we don't want to be there. You know, we don't want to be there because we don't like each other. We're not seeking to support one another. I know of Vietnamese who will go to another state just driving to support another Vietnamese. So it is really a separation, is a state of mind that will lead to a state of foot, that you will begin to move in that direction once your mind is in that direction. But right now, we actually do not believe that we can live without white people. Somehow we believe that the air conditioning won't blow, the toilet won't flush, unless there's white folks around, and we're the ones to fix the toilets and the air conditioning anyway. So it's really a state of mind to me more than anything else. And one thing, as a farmer, I know that God will reign and make plants grow without the white man being in the middle. So I don't feel any need for the white man. Unfortunately, many of us don't have skills that we feel that we can survive. He's taken away from us our skills. We have to get skills so that we can feel that we can survive, we can support our own self and each other, so we don't feel that we have to be a part of a falling system.
Absolutely. And as you're saying, you know, from a practical standpoint, from the on the physical plane, we already are segregated.
That's right.
The only difference is with segregation. Segregation generally implies a dominant and subjugated people. Those who are segregated are generally forced into areas without making a conscious decision to live in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
Based upon the desirability of the environment and the economic feasibility of living somewhere. So 90%, statistically, 90-plus percent of all Americans already live among their own race. Most white people only live around other white people. Most black people live around other black people. It's only in the world of television and movies
that all
of this integration exists, and there are pockets in America where there's some measure of integration. Outside of that, starting with the Jews, they live in clusters. And so separation, when the messenger says a state or territory that is ours, of our own, meaning, for example, Mississippi. Mississippi already has more black people than white.
That's just
that white people dominate it and run it. What he is saying is that we want territory that we dominate politically, economically, socially. We control our children's education. It doesn't mean, you know, getting on a boat and leaving.
That's right.
The call that Minister Farrakhan has made is based on the historical reality that black people primarily built America. And so it doesn't entail leaving America. It entails what Dr. Rizzi just said, taking control of our own and acting and spending in our own self-interest.
That's right.
But, you know, one of the things that very deep, Dr. Ava and Dr. Ridgely, one of the things, and Brother Michael, it's funny how there's such fear of separation. Like, the word separation is almost a cuss word to black people. You know, we say separation. No, you can't talk like that. Even to the fact that we will argue down, we will not separate it when, you know, we fought, bled, and died to be a part of this, and we don't want to separate from this, even though this has caused the destruction of us when we was better off segregated in the sense of our condition and the black economics that we had in our community. We were forced to do something for self. Our education was better for our children because we were teaching our own. But when you tell black people that you want to separate, that is a cuss word, and as you said, it's a fear to do something for ourselves as though we can't, as though we're not holding up America right now with all
already.
Our heart, blood, sweat, and tears to hold this country up. But the fact that you say that those that are actually in major organizations, major fraternities or sororities or whatever club, social club, will argue down that we will not come out of her. We will stay in her and be a part of her because we have earned some semblance of right to be here, as though you are can't separate and do for self.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, all of that is true, but I would add is that, as we say, history is best able or qualified to reward our research. So on the issue of separation, I think first starting with the Honorable Marcus Garvey and then being perfected, I would say, to the next level with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, they understood that our people would not internalize separation as a concept or an ideology. Therefore, they put in practice a model of separation.
Yeah.
And that is really what we must do. We must move from the ideological embracing of separation as a ideological position. We have to develop the mechanisms to drive an agenda and erect mechanisms that support some sort of concrete or economic development agenda that will put up a model. Once our people see other black people living together in peace and harmony, then we will win them over in the end if we follow the model that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has already showed us a glimpse of how it should work and some of the potential of what it will look like if we take it from where he left off and go to that next level. So it has to be, we can't expect all of our people to understand it because they've been indoctrinated with the ideology of white people. So
precisely.
We have to show them. We just can't about it. We have to show them.
And that goes back to Master Farad Muhammad's position that the masses would never comprehend the theology and ideology. Just a few would be able to capture the vision of a land of our own, even though it had been like that trillions of years, and we've only been like this a short time. But it's been long enough that it's genetic. It's been passed down 12 generations or more. And he said that only a few could withstand, would, number one, understand the theology, and number two, withstand the discipline necessary to move out on this. And the rest would come, as you're saying, Brother Michael, only when they see something palpable. You know, that's why black people poured out in the wake of the Zimmerman verdict. The minister said the Trayvon Martin case would be the nail in the coffin of white supremacy. Why did he say that? Because we've been teaching this forever. The messenger's been bringing this forever, but again, because we live with and under them, we reject it emotionally. But to kill this child and this man to walk out of the jail, that's not a concept. That's a physical reality.
Come on.
That's right.
And so when it happened, it affected all of black America, all the way up to the Oval Office, to the point that the president, who has been successful in avoiding addressing anything black throughout his presidency, his family, he said, his family and his friends, as well as his advisors, talked to him, and he was following this. And he came out, and as I said Sunday, for the first time, he spoke as a black man from the black experience. That's what the extreme injustice forced out of him and out of all of us, which the messengers already put in the back of the newspaper and the Muslim program. 400 years of blood, sweat, and tears. We cannot get along with each other in peace. And so now, finally, people are beginning to recognize from among us that this is not working. So we're gonna go now back to the phones. We've got Brother Donald is calling in from the 512 area code. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Donald. Welcome to Elevated Places.
Wa alaikum assalam, Ramadan Kareem. Mubarak.
Ramadan Kareem. Yes, sir. Very, okay. Very clearly.
Okay. Sister Ava, brothers, I just have to say that it's really a blessing to know the existence of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and under the leadership of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, you know, because with these teachings and this guidance, we can look and we can see clearly what is happening around us, and we can understand it as it happens and as it unfolds. And, you know, so this one case or one event with Trayvon Martin, the tragedy of Trayvon Martin, is something that is really bringing out a lot of aspects of what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave to us, and is showing the truth of what he gave to us. For example, you know, with this, many of our people are now going to be able to look and see that separation really is the only solution for us. We have, you know, the boycotts and the marches and the rallies, which, you know, I look at as a good thing, because everything has to be exhausted before our people can see this truth, that separation is the only solution. They have to go through all of that stuff, the marches, the boycotts, the voting, all of that stuff, in order for them to come to that final conclusion. So now we see two different things going on. Black people dissatisfied with the outcome of the verdict, and white people basically celebrating the outcome of it. But now the Justice Department is saying that they may pursue civil rights violations. And one of the things that I think that will happen with that is that in turn will bring about the anger and dissatisfaction of white people, you know, that instance of justice, little justice, will bring about the dissatisfaction in them. Now, look at what happened. When they didn't know what the verdict was, it was all everywhere, black and white, speculating that black people were going to get involved in riots and all of that if the verdict was not guilty. But we showed that is not, we have the discipline, you know, to stay away from that. But the question is, when the Justice Department pursues civil rights violations, what is going to be the response or the reaction of white people? Are they going to be able to have the same type of self-control and discipline that black people have been having? Or is what they have been trying to put on us going to be exposed in them? You know, another thing, the last thing is, I think it's very, you know, the minister, he spoke about Yaqub being born with a determined idea, and he explained the importance of that word determined and understanding words. But when the juror number 26 said that the verdict was already told, I don't really think that is a, I think that's a literal word when she said told. And when we look at it, we understand the meaning of told. We have to ask, who did the telling? So this whole thing, you know, with the Trayvon Martin and the aftermath is really going to bring us to face-to-face with the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad under the end, and the time of and what must be done by the Honorable Louis Farrakhan. So,
yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, Brother Donald. Very, very, very observant. Excellent call. We're, believe it or not, we're down to 25 minutes, so I'm going to get Dr. Salam. He's queued up next. Dr. Salam, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, family, and Ramadan Mubarak.
Ramadan Kareem.
I am so glad that we are continuing this. And I heard you talk about separation. And spiritually and holistically, we are already separated and been separated. what we need to do is share in each other's love and each other's birthrights. If we could see everybody born of us as us, then we could treat each other better. But the biggest problem we have is an intellectual disconnect. And Dr. Ava, you pricked something in me that Dr. Claude Anderson said two nights ago on a national broadcast. And that is, across the country, we're having meetings, and they've been told to go out and discuss what we can do about what happened to our brother being murdered. But Dr. Claude Anderson said something that connects to what we're doing right now. And he said the leadership that were black back in the day, when they came out on the podium to get ready to address issues, Massa had already gathered them in a smoke-filled room and said, there's three things you cannot do. No group agenda shall you mention. You only mention your individual opinion. Secondly, no black agenda. And thirdly, no blame of white supremacy. Mm-hmm. Now, I cited that because all across the country, like, let me just talk about Memphis for a minute. At the Civil Rights Museum, the lady that was spearheading this event, this is her announcement. We will not, these are her words, we will not discuss the trial, the content of the trial, nor the verdict or the acquittal. Now, let's go back to A on what Dr. Claude Anderson said. No group agenda equals the trial. B, no black agenda, the content. C, no blame of white supremacy.
Right.
Verdict nor the acquittal would be discussed.
Right.
So nothing has really changed. We have just evolved from one degree of slavery right into another degree of slavery. And if it were not for Elevated Places and the astuteness of this group and the one man in this country, and they can't see that, I say it again, the whole white supremacy faction in this nation and bordering areas are only angry with one man. They're not angry with the president. They own him. He couldn't even look at the camera when he was talking about the trial. He really didn't talk about the trial. So all I'm saying is this. The only thing we got right now under the sun that makes any sense at all is the time and what must be done. And I thank Allah for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan being dutiful to his teacher and being dutiful to Allah, because that is what saved my life, and I will fight on this mission till the day I die.
Thank you, sir.
Family.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Wa alaikum salam.
Well, panel, I want to hear from you on that, but just quickly, to Dr. Salam's point on what Claude Anderson said about white direction, Al Sharpton said this evening on his show, they played the clip of the juror B-29 and her dismay over having been forced by these five white women into an acquittal. He made a statement that, he had a guest on. He had a white man that was a guest, a black man that was a prosecutor, and a Latino woman who's a former prosecutor. The white man kept talking over everybody, and he kept repeating over and over, we have to respect the verdict. And by the time the discussion was done, Al Sharpton repeated it. He said, we have to respect the verdict. the Latino sister was saying, no, we don't. You know, the verdict was out of order. Proof, regardless of how raggedy the prosecution's case was, they proved, if nothing else, they proved manslaughter. And Al Sharpton went with the white man in saying, we have to respect the verdict. He said, we should look at the law and look at changing law. And that is what I was dealing with Sunday from the minister and the messenger. Laws do not change our condition.
That's
because
right.
Laws are not the cause, they're the effect. They grow out of the belief system.
That's
and
right.
The belief system of America is white superiority.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to say that to support
and,
what
Dr. And even in the context of the fallibility of being a human, jurors, that's why they have appellate courts and Supreme courts, because even judges, using their best faculties many times daily, make bad choices or bad interpretations or readings of the law, and it requires a higher panel to review to see if there's defect in judgment. And so if that happens with judges, then certainly jurors who are neophytes, you know, civilians to the law, even if they're a well-intended jury, can make a mistake. But, of course, we're not dealing with a well-intended jury in this case. So to say that we have to respect the jury's decision is disingenuous at best. You know, it's naive at best and just disingenuous, certainly in this case, because jurors can be wrong.
That's right.
Yeah.
And jurors can be tempted with.
But it goes back to white superiority.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
And jurors can be tampered with by money.
And are frequently tampered with by money, especially here in Chicago. We have a history of that.
Well, look at this, though. The jury consultant, and speaking of money, we all got, don't forget that Zimmerman had the most expensive law firm in the area.
Mm-hmm.
He had the most expensive jury consultant in the country.
Mm.
The top forensic expert in the country. Who was financing that? We
right.
know money was coming in from Jews up in New York and everywhere else. But the jury consultant said in an interview that he wanted a female jury. Now, when he said female, unsaid is white female. Because we
right.
know in America, you call white people women and men. You call us a Negro. There was an accident, and one man, one woman, and two Negroes died. Okay, this is the news. Okay, so he said he wanted all women, meaning all white women. He got what he wanted. He was very happy.
Mm-hmm.
Because with some white women. You automatically had an acquittal. They looked at Zimmerman as a hero.
Right.
And they said it. The other juror that has spoken, B37, the other one, she said George, she called him George in a very loving, affectionate way.
That's right.
George was trying to protect the community.
And don't forget, Sister Minister, that there was another white woman who was a witness who it was her backyard was located there at the crime scene, and she said that the sheriffs came and took her statement, but they never came back and called her in because her statement was against George Zimmerman.
Right.
And I can't remember the lady's name, but she said they took a written statement and they disappeared. They never came back, and they never included her in any type of investigation because her testimony, she said that she could clearly under, She clearly heard a young boy screaming
That's
for help.
That's what she said. That's what she said.
And
that
she was
she believed
as
it was Trayvon's voice. That's right.
That's right. So it's been plotted out all along the way, and I think when you talk about intent, I think intent, if I'm not mistaken, has to be a part of the factors that you calculate in determining guilt or innocence.
It does.
And so what was the intent, the institutional intent of whites from the prosecution to the law enforcement is obvious. And
that's right.
It just shows that this good old boy mentality is very pervasive among whites to this day. And that what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is telling us from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is right and exact, and it's just as timely as it has ever been for our people to understand the nature of these people.
When you know the brother that called earlier talked about lynching, and I gave a definition Sunday because and Sister LaDonna and I were talking about it, and she said she was glad I addressed it because so many of us see lynching as hanging. We think that that's but the definition of lynching is a violent punishment or execution.
Okay.
By a person or persons without due process for a crime that is real or imagined. And you know, we went through the history of Florida, which is one of the most violent state in the South. It's viewed as Disney World. It, because of the palm trees, people think they're in the Caribbean when they go down there. It's the deep South. And the most violent lynching in the 20th century was in Central Florida, where they tortured a 23-year-old black man for 12 hours because he allegedly confessed to the rape of a white woman. And historians are challenging that so-called confession. But 3,000 to 7,000 white people attended his lynching.
Wow.
They cut off his private parts and stuffed them down his throat. They cut him bit by bit. And when he finally mercifully died, they dragged him through the town. They cut up his hands and fingers, sold them for souvenirs. So this is, and of course no one, there wasn't even considered a murder. So this is why you remember the defense lawyer was so offended when they got the acquittal. Remember, he talked in a very nasty, hateful, condescending manner about the Martin family. And he said he's preparing to bring a motion for sanctions against the prosecution for even bringing charges against his client. Because the history of this country is you don't even charge a white man with an assault or killing of a black man. You don't even charge. How dare you put him through this? That is
well,
their position.
You know, as you're laying that out, it's making me think about it on the intellectual level and how ironically Disney is in Florida and how Disney, I would say, has been one of the premier institutions involved in the mental lynching of black children through its proliferation of white supremacist cartoon entities and characters that have programmed us for so many years to imbibe this consciousness of self-hatred and white admiration.
Excellent point. Yeah, because I think back especially to those early films, because they were the first ones to come out with the full feature-length cartoon
That's right.
films. And they are as racist as one could imagine.
That's right.
Well, you know,
yes, sir.
It's a difference between, say, just racist and a desire to control a human being, to break that human being down to be a slave or an animal, a domesticated animal for another human being. And this is the purpose of lynching. This is the purpose of letting Zimmerman go, is to dehumanize a people so that they would be in a subjective a position and accept a position beneath another people.
That's
and
right.
Again, I got to go back to the sheep, the sheepdog, and the evil shepherd. To give the regular white person a feeling of superiority over the black, to have a stable society, whereas there's only a few who's going to have all the money. So then you go, how do you socially engineer the rest of the people? Well, you got to have a scapegoat. You got to have someone who's the next level can feel superior over, so they won't turn their shoulder and look at the one over them. So the lynching is to feed the fear into black people, and to feed superiority into white people, so that the master of both can use them both. I like Mr. Farrakhan said, he's going to expose the enemy of man and mankind.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
now, when he said that, I said, that's heavy.
Yeah.
He's going to expose the enemy of man and mankind. Who is
and
that?
And mankind.
And mankind. So
that's
who
right.
is this he's getting ready to expose?
That's
all
right.
Praises
excellent
to Allah.
Got Sister Joella's been on a long, long time. We haven't had a call from a sister. Let me just get her in before we go forward. Sister Joella,
Assalamu alaikum. Alaikum salam.
Ramadan.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I just wanted to let you know that you just look so beautiful intellectually, physically. On Sunday, and we thank you so much, and may Allah continue to bless us as a family and our beloved Minister Louis Farrakhan in terms of teaching us the time and what must be done. And I just wanted to say quickly, sister, today is, if our brother Emmett Till were alive, he would be 72 years of age, and you're having your show on his birth anniversary.
My God.
And it's so, you know, just on point that we're discussing Brother Trayvon and the same thing that you were telling us about Sunday, the lynching, Dr. Ridgely, Brother Terrence, and Brother Michael are saying about how we just need to teach our children, our youth, how the history of what took place and what is still taking place today. And it's also, if I'm not mistaken, that the man who testified, the brother who testified against these two white devils that killed Brother Emmett, just passed away in Chicago. You might want to look that up. Yes.
Wow.
And so again,
two days ago, I think.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. And all we're saying is that we have to continue the fight. And Brother Michael brought up something today about Marcus Garvey, and he was quoting and saying, this is why our beloved minister and the messenger really continued to keep him and teach us about him, because it was said that in 1940, he passed in 1940 in London of a stroke. But he made a comment, and I'm just going to read it from a book where he said, when I am dead, look for me in the whirlwind or the storm.
In the whirlwind,
look for me. That's right. Look for me all around you, for with God's grace, I shall come and bring with the countless millions of black slaves who have died in America and the West Indies and the millions in Africa to you in the fight for liberty, freedom, and life. So may Allah continue to bless us as we continue to learn more on Elevated Places.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much, Sister Joella. Yes.
Wow.
I had no idea that this was the birthday of Emmett Till. That's amazing.
Mm.
Yes, it is today, and so these killers lived all these years.
Well, they didn't go to trial till 50 years later.
Right, exactly. That's true. That's true. But justice ultimately comes, but you have to fight for it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Absolutely. What we're attempting to do now, because we have so many callers still hanging on, is try to extend the show by about 15 or 20 minutes, and if that's if the panel is amenable to us doing that.
Yes, ma'am.
It's fine with me. I let the people do all the talking.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So,
yes,
okay,
ma'am.
I think we've hopefully done that. Yeah, it looks like we successfully got it extended. So I had to leave the studio more momentarily on the screen to do that. So now I'm back. And our dear friend, I'm so glad he called, because I neglected in my opening, because our beloved program director, Sister Rona, always sends us a production timeline, and I did not print it out in time. But we stream live every Thursday night on WKBOL in Waterloo, Iowa. And that's a powerful FM station there, and that is due...
Wow.
To the efforts of the brother that I just opened the mic on, and that's Brother Michael Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Michael.
Wa alaikum salam, and Ramadan Mubarak to all of you.
Ramadan Kareem. And,
yeah.
Of course, you, in addition to carrying Elevated Places, you carry The Time and What Must Be Done on Wednesday evening, and you host your own show, Torchlight,
every Friday morning.
Yes, sir.
Yes, ma'am.
So we couldn't not have you on.
Well, first of all, I'm very honored to be on. This is a wonderful program, as it is always wonderful to listen to Elevated Places, and I'm so inspired when I listen. Okay. It is that effect that I think that you have been driving for, and that is to have that conversation as if we're all sitting in our living rooms, and as I'm sitting here with my family, they're breaking fast, I'm still just absorbed by the discussion. I'm having that effect and that, you know, that coming to Jesus moment, if you will, but all praise, that Jesus Muhammad moment. So we are so happy to be carrying you over the air. And I do want to add that we are carrying the minister every morning now. We just decided
Ooh.
To open up mornings every morning. And then in addition to carrying them every morning in the early morning around prayer time, we're also carrying random, that's the random time and what must be done, and then every Wednesday, of course, and then on Sundays at 1 o'clock, the minister is being aired over our station here in Waterloo. So we are very and so proud to be carrying this program, because I believe the community is being enlightened to the core. So honored. So I'm so grateful. And also I have to add, Sister Minister Ava, that your message, as always, but your message on Sunday was peculiar. I mean, just absolutely spectacular. The delivery and all of the content, every aspect, I just thought it was just right on point. And I believe that Allah really guided you from my observation and understanding of this divine wisdom that we have been given from the Most Honored Elijah Muhammad, and now through his beloved and our beloved, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. You know, it was so much, and I'll just jump right to the few thoughts that I had real quick, and maybe have you all expound on it a little more. But I was dealing with the separation piece, and I thought that was a very good piece, especially with in contrast in light of, if you will, of the Trayvon Martin situation and what's going on with Trayvon Martin, many other young black brothers and sisters who are being killed, either systematically through social engineering or by the direct hand of the enemy in other forms. But particularly as it pertains to the Trayvon Martin, which, you know, was being allowed to be propagated before the public eye, I found it to be, you know, something very significant as a sign. And one of the things that I did in my program last week, as I went and looked up the name Trayvon, and I found it to be very interesting that his name meant the brave one or brave one. And I found that to be striking in light of, I hope that he whooped Zimmerman's backside and pardon my expression.
Yes, sir.
That's my hope and prayer that he put it before and whatever, before whatever happened, and regardless of the outcome, I pray that Allah will bless him. But also,
I'm with
that
you in this.
This beast will die with that pain in his brain, and that their brains will. And I know this may be kind of hard, but this is what I felt in my heart to say that Allah will strike their brains with terror for the wickedness of what they did, not only to Trayvon Martin, but what Trayvon Martin is a symbol of, as you described lynching for so many decades, so many centuries of our hardship and being under the rule of our enemy. But the separation piece, which I think is a very crucial piece, and I was trying to, you know, just make sure I made some notes so I could give clear thoughts and just a short opportunity to say a few words. And the thought hit me, and I think Dr. Rigsley touched upon it, but it's our fear, and it's our fear and the fact that we are so fearful of the enemy, we have an emotional attachment to the enemy, which ultimately leads to an unreasonable expectation from him. So our fear has us attached. We haven't truly let go of him because we're still afraid of him. And I think it's in the scripture that Satan frightens his friends. And you know, whatever you fear, you, in a sense, worship. And I'm paraphrasing that thought. But that thought hit me. And then maybe if you all can expound on this a little more. And also
sure.
The fact that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad mentioned, he said that Islam comes after all else has failed. We have yet to have everything having failed on us. We're still having the unreasonable expectation that this enemy is going to all of a sudden treat us well. He's going to wake up and just say, okay, I'm going to give you black folks some justice. I'm going to give you some freedom and some equality, when he will never give us that. So we haven't come to the full realization of one of the key principles of what we have been taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan, and those three important essential knowledge, and that's the knowledge of God, the knowledge of self, and the knowledge of the enemy. But we haven't really fully embraced, accepted the reality of our enemy. Because if we would accept that reality of our enemy, then it would propel us, it would, or compel us to separate from him. We wouldn't want to be around him because of his stench. So that's my thought. That I just wanted, maybe
well,
if you all can
thank
expound
you.
On that a little bit more.
Yes,
yes
sir.
Thank you.
Beautiful anchor for the program and panel. And thank you, Brother Michael, for your work and your beautiful expression of the teachings and what you're doing on these airwaves every single day. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And we'll deal
praise
with that.
Allah.
Yes, sir.
Yes, thank you very much. As-salamu alaykum.
All right. Brother Michael.
Yes.
Student Minister Michael, yes, what is your response to Brother Michael's point about we have yet to, you know, what that last thing is? What's the this last thing holding us to the enemy?
Well, it's the conditioning of our minds, and that's why I think it's very apropos. And maybe in one of your upcoming lectures, you can provide us with some deeper insights and provide our people into a reminder of the depth of how we have been so consciously and subconsciously dominated with the ideals of white supremacy, and Disney being that driving force, you know, from Mickey Mouse all the way down to the Uncle Remus characters, a part of Disney. You know, the old cartoons that made mockery of the Native Americans and every dark-skinned character Disney has ever put forward up until recently has always been served to embed in the minds of children that blacks are these buffoons or these savage people.
Mm-hmm.
It has really destroyed our generations of us as children, and so it's really apropos that this is occurring in the backyard of Disney, you know.
That's right.
Because that is we are controlled by institutions, and white people have rhetoric, but their rhetoric is
is supported by structure and institutions. And so we have a professor here in Chicago, Professor Lance Williams at Northeastern University, who always talks about structural violence to make white people understand that your racism, the reason that blacks can never be racist is because we've never erected structures or institutions to impose racial superiority on any people.
Exactly.
We don't create movies to put down white people. We don't create cartoons or stage plays or any of that to just with the whole objective to destroy, psychologically decimate Caucasians or any other people. This is unique to white culture. And
yes.
We have to attack it at that level, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Honorable Louis Farrakhan has shown us, that we got to go to the root of it, and the root of it is a spiritual condition. It's a spiritual and mental condition that supersedes the law, as you said, and it supersedes formal education. It supersedes these superficial things that a lot of our leaders believe will solve our problem.
Right, because those are all effects. They're
right.
Not the cause.
Can we go back to the basic teachings? And since the minister talks about, you know, why did God permit the devil to be produced, and how
right.
Yaku brought these people out of us,
mm-hmm.
and how, you know, one of the things he asked, he said, I will make your brother work for you.
Right.
So the system is set up by which one people is supposed to enslave another. So mm-hmm. what white people are, they are the residual part of us that is lazy and wants somebody else to be the sucker for us, wants somebody else to do the work. And so Minister Farrakhan is warning us that as long as we allow the weak germ in us to dominate, the white man will use that against us.
Exactly.
So we have to get out of the mindset of trying to find somebody to manipulate or control or use. Then we can work together. But, you know, black people try to do the same thing to each other that white people do to us.
Boy.
Will not allow that to happen to each other, because I'm not going to let you get over on me.
Now, brother. You teach
okay?
now, brother.
So we just got to cut that out so that we can live together. Stop trying to get over on each other. Let the brown germ go. Let the brown germ go. Let's stop playing games. Then we can build something.
That's
you know,
right.
Right now. I water goes $1.25. You know, people try to Jew me down to some less than $1.25. Why? You can sell a watermelon for $10. Why?
Mm.
Stop playing with me, man. So we got to stop playing with each other so we can get it out of here.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. And as Brother Michael from Iowa said, the emotional attachment. Which we, as the minister says, you know, he talked about fear, Brother Michael did. Well, the minister said sometimes
right.
we use virtue to cover a vice. And we call being a coward being forgiving and patient, you see,
right.
and humble, when really
right.
it's cowardice. And we use that as an excuse, as you all are saying, we'd rather stay confined to the superficial. We don't create institutions that manifest white people for what they are, because in this paradigm, we are the inferior. We're less than, and we have bought into that. We believe that more than they do. And that is why we'll go and take our children into an environment that promotes the inferiority of black people. We will actually buy into it. But the only where I would differ with Brother that we have not, that all has not failed us, I think that the reason the minister said this case is the nail in the coffin of white supremacy is because we are finally realizing all has failed us. Because we thought when we put a black man in the Oval Office, that would do it. See, every time something failed us, we went to the next thing. We got black people in Congress, still haven't changed. We've got PhDs galore. They're a dime a dozen. All of us are doctors. It hasn't changed our condition one whit, okay? If it was about church and religion, we'd be on top of the world because we got a church on every corner. We've done it all. We generate $1 trillion a year in the economy. Oprah's got $3 billion herself, so it's not money. We've achieved everything that you can achieve, and we're in a worse condition than we've ever been in. Our children can't go to the store and get a bag of Skittles. And he was murdered not by the police, but by a vigilante.
Mm-hmm.
That's the quintessence of white supremacy, where you can't survive an encounter with the lowest of white people. This is a man that's been arrested numerous times himself.
That's right.
The word is he has ADHD. He was on medication. He's a reject from society, even though his father's a lawyer. He's a coward. He's sitting there in that car, overweight, soft. They have people come up and testify. He's a punk, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So his friends told him to get a gun. He was afraid of a dog in the neighborhood.
That's right. That's right.
But he can gun down one of our best. This is a child that came out of a family of educated, contributing people to society.
See, all white people are deputized to put a black person in line wherever they see him out of line. All white
there
people are
all
deputized.
All of them by virtue of being white.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's
yeah.
right. And
but
what
I,
we
I,
have
I,
to
I,
do is deputize ourselves to not be put in place by anybody and for us to get ourselves in place. Everybody's
you know
got to take
what?
That responsibility, not put the responsibility on somebody else.
But we can't do it until we live among ourselves. See, we don't have a base. We're just out here wandering around. We don't have a land that is ours. We can't say that so-called Africa is ours, because until we here in America secure our freedom, justice, and equality, our people there will not have it.
Yeah. Well,
because
I
we
like
built the wealthiest, most powerful nation on earth that's subjugating everybody else.
Yes, ma'am. But I think what was stated a few minutes ago is so critical in terms of the need for us to kill the brown germ.
Absolutely.
And how we really have we have a great privilege of being awakened through the voice of the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, but that privilege, that blessing comes a responsibility. And we must really strive to hold ourselves accountable to that calling, because it's only by eliminating this brown germ tendency and this brown germ mentality that we can actually or actualize this thing we call separation, this thing we call a place of our own. And this is what impedes us from taking the examples that have been laid before us and the sacrifice
right.
of so many before us to the next level. We have to strive to purge ourselves of these petty differences and so forth, so that we can be effective in giving our people what we have a responsibility to give to them, not only in terms of individuals who are clean and moral, but what it looks like for people to truly work together and build something from the sweat of our brow based upon the principles of freedom, justice, and equality.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. We're going to go to the phones again. Sister Sabora has been on. She's so patient. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to Elevated Places.
Wa alaikum salam. And Ramadan Mubarak, everyone.
Ramadan
Kareem.
This panel discussion is very eye-opening, and it's reassuring me personally that the work and the word that Allah set forth not just from Master Farah Muhammad, but from the beginning about his perfection will not fail. And it's not failing. But what my question is, to get your take on the fact that we've experienced such injustices after physical slavery right up to this day with the outright affront of this case and other cases that are currently going on and other killings that are currently going on. When it comes to separation, as you said earlier in the conversation, Dr. Ava, that we're already segregated, we're already separated. How do you see us accepting this? Because I think it's a matter of acceptance at this point and coming into our own and our unity. We're, like you said, and other panelists have said, we're already physically separated. We're already dealing with the dissatisfaction, but not enough to make our own personal change. And then secondly, I'd like you all to delve into, well, I liken it unto our situation as a people here, as a woman in domestic violence. The woman that has been in it, going through it, her family knows it, the community knows it, the police know it, but this man is influential and has money and has power, but she still puts up with it. And nobody else can save her but herself. Nobody right. can make the decision to save her until she herself decides to make the decision, this is enough, this is unfair, this is dangerous, and it's not healthy and safe for myself or my family.
Yes, ma'am.
So I see the minister not only speaking to the white man, but he's also speaking to the white man inside ourselves. And like Master Farah Muhammad and the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, they came to give us the love for ourselves in order to confront that which came from ourselves, the evil from, in my humble opinion.
Yes, ma'am.
Because, like you said, this white man did come from us. So
right.
it's a part of ourselves that really doesn't like ourselves.
Yeah. Well, you know, what it is, it's a and the, I want everyone to look at this latest episode of The Time and What Must Be Done. How Satan came into existence, and going back to what Dr. Rizzi brought about the brown germ, Brother Michael just put us back on that point because that's the ultimate issue. And the minister is really doing a clearing of us, almost like an exorcism,
yes.
By giving us point blank with the utmost clarity how this circumstance of black and white and red and yellow colors, why light skin is so desirable. And dark skin is rejected, not in the United States alone, but globally.
Right.
And it's not cultural, because we went through the whole Ungawa, Black Power, Afro, all that, and went right back to 2013, little black children picking the white doll and throwing the black doll in the trash. Why? That's genetic. That is the work of one of our scientists, Dr. Yaku, who, in studying that brown germ, that germ, it's not so much that it's evil; it's self-destructive. It's a destructive force within the black man. That as long as it remained inside of him, his goodness kept it in check. It would show itself, the minister said, from time to time, in a horrible way, but still limited. But 66 trillion years ago, the deportation of Moon was the result of the mindset of that brown germ. 50,000 years ago, Shabazz going into the jungle, brown germ. But yet and still, nothing ever came out with the wickedness and destructive characteristics that are manifested in the Caucasian that came into existence over a 600-year period by that extraction process. And so now, as all of you are saying, we have to confront that. We are confronting it. And yeah. I'll put it like this and be quiet, that on the whole question of separation, the messenger answered that. We're not making that disconnect. The minister made it, but we're not making it.
Mm-hmm.
He said Allah will make you separate.
That's right.
We wouldn't do it. So we
That's
don't need
right.
to keep saying what's going to make us do it. Nothing except God himself. So he's forcing it. We're being cut off from food stamps, housing. They're closing the schools. Everybody's in jail or dead.
Mm-hmm.
We're eating fake food.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
there's nothing left to do but get up out of here. There's nothing left. Allah is making us separate. Concomitantly with all this being done to us, he's destroying their world.
That's right.
Every single day they are suffering from natural disasters. You know, FEMA can only do so much. They can only print so much money.
That's right.
Before all of this comes crashing down. They are getting their behind kicked each and every single day if you study the weather around the planet and in America.
That's right.
Every kind of natural disaster you can fathom is happening all the time. Drought, flooding, snow, rain, hail, sleet, fires in California. Everything is happening. So we're being forced out of here. We don't have to worry about it now.
Mhm. That's right.
But now we got to suffer because we wouldn't do it willingly.
Mhm.
That's right.
So we're going out hard.
Mhm.
But thank you so much, beloved. Appreciate you.
All praises be to Allah. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
All right. We're under 10 minutes, panel.
Can I put a plug in for Blog Talk Radio Saturday night for the NOI, the Nation of Islam Ministry of Agriculture?
Sir. Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Oh yeah, we have Blog Talk Radio, NOIMOA, at 7 Central, 8 Eastern, right after the time of what must be done. And this week,
yes.
It will be me and Sister Ann hosting the show, and we will have on the black farmers from the Independent Black Farmers, who we did a press conference with on the same day of the verdict of Trayvon Martin. And what's interesting is beaten up in the court with the Department of Justice, with the USDA against them, and they can't get a hearing for the world to know what's being done to them. And so as we know, we need land. The government is taking black farmers' land and then putting them in jail in the process. So please come in and listen in. You can call in at 347 945-5454 and be a part of a Blog Talk Saturday at 7 Central, 8 Eastern. Thank you very much.
And that's right after the time
right after.
What must be done.
That's
yes,
right.
So just stay on your computer, stay on the internet, your iPad or whatever, because this is why we have Dr. Rizzi as our contributor, because this is the first step toward the change in the educational paradigm that's keeping us in slavery, because it's a paradigm that completely excludes land ownership and food control.
That's right.
It's nowhere in the educational system are we taught that. And then after that, we're not taught finance.
That's right.
So we need land to live, and we handle money every day. We're not taught those
right.
two things.
That's right.
That's
in
right.
the white man's paradigm. So that's one of the major transformations of the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And we're down to 5 minutes, so we got to get Brother Hoyle in here. He's been on for like an hour.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Royal.
Walaikum and Ramadan Mubarak. I'm going to get some quick things quick that's so powerful. This comes from the NOI research group in this latest paper, The American Legal System and the Jewish Talmud. Yeah. I'm going to read this. It's powerful. You know, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said in Our Savior Rises, a Jew's civilization. Now, listen to this, y'all. Just as the Jim Crow laws in the American South, the Jewish Talmud contains some frightening legal concepts. Even the best of the Goyim, non-Jews, should be killed. And it's from Abdallah Zarath. Trayvon was potentially our best, and a unanimous six of six jurors in white America believe he should be killed. Number two, the life of the Goyim and all of his physical powers belong to a Jew, George Zimmerman. Florida police and the courts clearly believe this. Number four, comment section Yabama 98A says all Gentile children are animals. In fact, it says that all Goyim are animals in human form, and that they prefer sex with cows. Trayvon's mother, Sabrina Fulton, said, "I believe George Zimmerman hunted my son like an animal." And I think this is six. It says, and one that applies to the Zimmerman case, if a Gentile hits a Jew, the Gentile must be killed. And in one of the sections it says in Sanhedrin 57:8, when a Jew murders a Gentile, there will also be no death penalty. And you see all of these in this Talmud. This is under Talmud mentality and Talmud law. This is a powerful article in this latest Final Call, sister. I'm going to tell you, have y'all seen this movie? I want y'all to check out this other movie that it's called Goodbye, Uncle Tom. Have y'all heard about that?
Oh, yes. Yes, I have. I've seen it, used it in several training classes I've done.
They banned it. I think the French made it. They banned it. But Sister Ava, I want to. I know we got to get off. You did an excellent job Sunday, and like I said, the time of what must be done. This show. Check out Goodbye Uncle Tom too. People got to see it. You know, if you never heard about it, check it out. Some people can't take it. It's on too. They banned it back in the 70s. They were going to put it out during Roots, and people are blown away. You know about it, but still. Like I said, we got to get this final call. The teaching is, this is powerful. This show is powerful. Tweet it and put it out. And like I said, we're under a Talmud mentality and a Talmud law. And it's got the mind of our people. And Dr. Ridley, you're doing an excellent job on your article, Sister Ava. We all, you know, this big hand that need to knock this devil out. So, and the main leader with the fist is Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So, like I said, may Allah bless y'all. Ramadan Mubarak, and I'll check back with you, inshallah, next week.
Yes, sir. Ramadan Kareem. Thank you. Thank you reading that. And everybody, please get the Final Call. It is just at peak level in terms of quality of journalism and research, and it contains not only the time and what must be done, but messages from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Because one mistake we make is thinking that slaves are taught to do. We think compartmentally, and we think of things in an isolated manner. We have to be knowledgeable of a history and a context that as the minister's been teaching and. The president used the term context when he spoke at the press conference. And even though he was made to go up there, I'm sure he resisted having to do it, but he did it. And we got to give him some credit for doing that, because in speaking out the way he did, he freed so many bourgeois Negroes. And you heard black men from the highest levels of business and politics and other arenas come out and publicly testify to the treatment they've received as black men in America. And that, to me, is a bonding moment of us as a people. There's an awareness settling in that we better join together.
That's right.
Because there is no such thing as climbing up out of this. As the messenger said, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said,
You can't rise above the condition of your people. You can't.
That's right.
You know, so I want to thank you. Brother Terrence had to leave. You know, he's in Philadelphia, but we thank him for having come on. Dr. Ridgely, Student Minister Michael Muhammad, the Elevated Places team, Brother Bobby, Sister Donna, Sister Rona, and thank you, callers and listeners. Those we did not get to, call us back next week. May Allah continue to bless all of us. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam.
Thank you for listening to and participating in Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Muhammad. Be sure to join us right here every Thursday at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. If you enjoyed our show today, please bookmark Elevated Places as one of your favorites. And remember, we are all preparing for a brand new season.